Why are you so serious? Like, why do you care so much? How many more generations are we going to let down? Yeah. When are we actually going to see that change? Who is this student? Yeah. Like,
how does an 11-year-old end up at a hackathon?
I wanted to make sure that my word was heard. I, at 15, was asking the big question. I'll never change who I am to fit what I think a woman in tech or a tech professional looks like.
You're working for one of the biggest companies in the world.
And I just sent it to them. The one question that is so difficult to answer.
I mean, I might say Lilla for Prime Minister.
Literally living in the future. Hello, I'm Lella and I'm taking you behind the future.
Welcome to another episode of Behind the Future. I'm your host, Becky, and I have a fabulous co-host with me today, the wonderful Zachary. Zachary, tell us a bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Zachary. I'm in year 12 and I go to MGGS. I study media, politics and economics.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for joining us on the show today. And wow, do we have a fantastic guest for you. This lady inspires me so much, the wonderful Lella. Lella, tell us who you are and what you do.
Hello, I'm Lella. I'm 21 years old and I'm a proud humanitarian in tech. Whilst I read politics, international relations at university, I lead IBM's global student strategy, ensuring that young people are at the heart of all decisions about us.
Love it. Wow, what an intro. You've said that before as well, I'm sure. So, Zachary, over to you for the first question.
Yeah. Lella, I know you started coding at the age of 8. Was it self-taught or not? And how has it impacted you? Did it give you a head start compared to your peers?
Yeah, so like many of us, growing up online, you're fascinated by the way that we can interact with this completely different world. I remember being sat at my parents' work computer, using like the BBC, like numeracy games, and wondering like, how does this work? And honestly, it sounds cheesy now I say it, but I hit inspect element, which is the like way to pull up the code behind a page, and found this mystery language. And honestly, it was from there, being a classic young person, I was always asking why. I wanted to know what this language was, how it worked. That interested me far more than the game I'd played hundreds of times. So from there, went on and found some online learning programs, Khan Academy, Code Academy, and taught myself how to code by working through those websites. I'd always been interested in digital. I had a passion for like watching animated films, like Pixar really fascinated me. And if you ask 7-year-old me, that's what I said I wanted to be, an animator at Pixar Animation Studios. So they had a program with Khan Academy at the time that took you behind the scenes of how animation was developed. And it was realizing how this code can produce such a creative output that we all enjoyed that led me on to what it is I do today, being able to turn my passion and my hobbies into something positive using technology as the catalyst to do so.
Love that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So what were the first things you started to build with the code?
Honestly, like now I look back at it, it was very simple, like illustrations and drawing like different shapes and basic mini games and things like that. So it was nothing crazy intense. It wasn't until I attended a hackathon. I hope I'm not jumping ahead in your questions. But it wasn't until I attended my first hackathon that I learned actually how I can turn that hobby of mine and that interest into my purpose. And at the time, it was a breakthrough moment of kind of cloud computing and a lot of no code or low code solutions where you were able to use like building blocks. And a lot of the listeners may be familiar with like Scratch or some of the online tools where you can like use building block style code to build solutions. But this was taking that way beyond into the next level. So I was able to build chatbots, very similar to what we now know as like AI, like tools where you're using natural language, image recognition, tone analysis, a lot of useful tools. So being able to take my hobby and what was just like playing around, seeing how something worked, learning about this mystery language that powered everything that I loved to interact with online, and then turning that into actually like, how can this be a business solution or a career pathway?
I love that. And so what age were you when you went to the hackathon?
I went to the hackathon at 11. It was a postgraduate hackathon. So I remember sitting in the back of the class, of the amphitheater where it's taking place. And one of the organizers, who's now one of my first mentors at IBM, came over to me and said like, oh, is it your mum who's participating in today's competition? Like, what are you doing here? And I was like, no, I'm here. And I remember saying like, I'm here to win. And I went on and won. And at the time, the solution that I developed with some university students at the local university was using, I'm trying to remember, it was, you could hold up your phone, similar to, you might have used like Google Street View in 3D, where you can be like, where am I? Like, and it'll point this giant arrow to tell you where to go. It was basically thinking of that back in like I don't even know what year that would have been, like 10, 15 years ago. No, 10 years ago, because I'm 21. And that was it really. And it was looking at how we could have locals describe to tourists and take them on like recommended pathways. And it was able to give you like travel advice, because when I've traveled, I never wanted to go like to all of the touristy spots. I want to know what the local would do. So it was like a guide in your pocket. That was the idea we came up with, and that's how I got like that first connection into industry.
And how does an 11-year-old end up at a hackathon though? Like, how did you know about it and turn up and everything?
So my parents, although they didn't come from a technical background, were very supportive of my hobbies. And everyone asked me like, oh, your parents must be like, how on earth, like, what do they do? Are they in tech? And that's a very common assumption that people have. But if anything, the thing that they do well and continue to do to this day is championing what they know I love and making sure that they do their very best to support me and find any opportunity that they know would be valuable. And I think at the time, when I look back to my early computer science classrooms, a lot of my friends were so demotivated by the textbooks and the way that it was taught in class. And whilst I had this early interest, my parents were afraid like that kind of flame would like go out, because I wasn't feeling ignited by the way it was being taught at school. So it was lucky that this hackathon opportunity came up. I used to live in Dubai and I spent 6 years living there, and it is a very future first, big focus on women in tech, big focus on like the next generation workforce. And it was fortunate that that opportunity came up and led me to IBM.
I love that. I love that. It was meant to be.
Honestly.
Because that was then you first meeting IBM that's led to the pathway that you've gone on there.
Similar. So I worked with them for the remainder of the time that I lived in Dubai. So from 11 to 15. And then during the COVID pandemic, reconnected with IBM, but a completely different side. A lot of people think that it's just one kind of company, but there are so many business units within it that many people don't even meet across the technologies that we have on offer. So it's a different side of the business that I'm working with now, but it's all one big blue.
Yeah. And so that bit where you were in Dubai, what were you doing then when you started working with them? So you're between 11 and 15. Most people are working in a supermarket or in a restaurant at that point, and you're working for one of the biggest companies in the world.
Yeah. So I got employed by IBM when I was back in the UK. So 15 turned 16 in that summer. But when I was in Dubai, I was working with them as like more of a volunteer. So I got a lot of work experience and mentorship. I did my first public speech in front of the entirety of the IBM Middle East and Africa Sales Academy with their general manager, so like their CEO of the region. So talk about like, people say, oh, your confidence, or where do you learn to public speak? It was literally from just doing it. And I think the same way when you learn to ride a bike, once you take the stabilizers off, you don't think about it. Like, that's very much been me with my exposure to the working world. Like, I don't think about my age or my gender or whatever, because I'm just so used to being in that space. Of course, there are knockbacks and times where I do reflect on that, but it was those early moments where the industry leaders were my teachers that have shaped everything that I know and love about technology today.
So when you got on that stage, so you were how old when you did that big talk?
Probably 12, yeah.
12. Did you realise how big a thing that was, or were you a little bit naive to it in some ways as to like what was happening?
I knew it was important. And I really remember it like it was yesterday, because I remember being so focused on looking at the general manager and not wanting to look at the audience, because I knew it was huge. It was in one of the top hotels in Dubai, like the massive ballroom, like all the way back, you could see people. I'd watched the person before me give a keynote and he came off stage and I saw him in the green room and he was like so nervous. I was like, oh my gosh, like what? I don't think I processed it until I was up there.
Yeah.
And I remember, as I say, like really keeping strong eye contact with the co-host. And then I did take a moment when I got like an applause or a laugh from the audience and looked out, and I remember seeing my mum and my mentor in the audience and think like, I have a picture of that exact moment, and it's my LinkedIn headline, like banner.
Oh, is it?
Because that was like one of the biggest moments for me was like, that was my kind of like, this is happening. This, it was like the start for me to show me what things could lead to. Because as I say, it was just my hobby. Like, who would have thought that something that I taught myself out of sheer curiosity would lead me to a stage like that? And no, I probably didn't realize its grandeur in the moment, but coming off the stage, seeing the reaction on social media, and people to this day who I meet me, like even last week I was at a conference and a completely different person said, yeah, I was in that audience. I remember you. Like, I thought your name was familiar. It's crazy to think how many people that moment impacted without me even realizing. I was just going to talk about what I'd been learning.
And it was probably better that you didn't realize how big it was, because I mean, most adults that are really experienced would have had their knees shaking and their hands shaking at something like that. So wow, what an incredible moment. Your journey is just insane. So you then, you're back in the UK, age 15. I say back in the UK, 13. That was 13.
Moved to, moved up north, actually, to Harrogate in North Yorkshire at 13. So complete opposite. It was like stepping in a time capsule back in time to this spa town, like compared to Dubai, where it was literally living in the future.
Yeah, that must have been a real juxtaposition. You were working towards your GCSEs. Tell us a bit about that.
So it was a really difficult time, actually, because I'd started a new school. I was looking at my GCSE options, and whilst for many that's a really exciting moment because you finally get to get rid of the subjects that you don't enjoy, for me I was at this moment where I didn't quite know what it was I wanted to study and what opportunities that would lead to, because as I already mentioned, computer science wasn't fulfilling me the way it was being taught in the classroom. And actually, the all girls school that I was at the time didn't even offer GCSE computer science as an option. So I lobbied like the head teacher and managed for my year group to be the first cohort to go through computer science GCSE. So I did geography, history, computer science, French, and like all of the core subjects as well. But definitely, like, I did start to think like the difference between what I knew tech to be beyond the classroom, and when I looked out of the classroom window and knew about all of these tech developments and what it was that I was experiencing in my own time versus what I'd gone and like lobbied for the school to teach us. I knew there was a great difference, and I knew that whilst it was definitely a step forward that we were able to choose those subjects and do computer science, that we weren't quite at the end point yet. There was a long way to go.
Well done getting it being able to be able to study it, so the lobbying to be able to study in it. But actually then when it falls flat a little bit, that you're not learning, you've learned more yourself, you've taught yourself more, that must be really frustrating.
And you know, after all of that, we had our GCSEs cancelled in 2020. So I never even sat the qualification. I had done my GCSE in ICT early, actually. I did that back in Dubai when I was 11, I want to say. So I did do that qualification. I was in what, like years 8 at the time, and I was going into the year 11 classroom. But yeah, I didn't get to sit that computer science qualification. And that was actually what led on to this next stage, which is more what it is that I'm doing today.
And so then 2020 was a pivotal moment, wasn't it? So tell us what happened. Obviously, we know the pandemic hit, but tell us your reaction to the pandemic, because I don't think it was the same as most people's.
Well, you know, banana bread is delicious. TikTok is tempting to doom scroll. But for me, I've always turned anxiety and uncertainty into action. So as I mentioned with that computer science example, I knew that I wanted to study that. I wasn't going to sit back and grumble about it. How could I change that? And the pandemic was that moment where, coupled with a conversation at home where my mum said to me, she was like, Lella, like, what are you going to explain to recruiters? What are you going to say you did like during this window of not knowing like what everyone was going to be in this position? How are you going to make sure you stay ahead? I just took to Medium, you know, the online blog page, and penned an open letter. And I just expressed how I was feeling. Schools closed, exams cancelled, my rite of passage completely taken away from me overnight. And really just this feeling of like, we'd worked so hard towards, it's my GCSE timetable defined every moment. Like, how can I go back to, like, what do I return to? Who am I beyond my studies? So in this open letter, I just expressed the fact that, of course, I felt this way. I'd been fortunate to have those early industry opportunities, which had that exposure beyond the textbooks. And whilst I could go and reconnect with those connections that I made over in Dubai, there were so many others who arguably were even more deserving and didn't have that way to just get back in touch with their old mentors, you know?
Yeah.
So this was where my passion turned into my purpose. And this open letter, I then just scoured the internet to find as many email addresses as I could for senior executives across the tech industry. And I just sent it to them. I sent it to news outlets. I sent it to journalists. I wanted to make sure that my word was heard. And it was funny because a webinar came up at IBM and my mentor sent it to me. And she said, hey, this is one of my, like, not just role models, I say real models. So someone who I look up to, that as much as I would a role model, but someone more tangible like you and I. And she said, you should totally go check it out. And this was a time where I was so deep in my revision. I had like my French speaking like the following week. I was like, why am I going to do that? Like, who knows, my exams might be back. You know, you never know. Like, I was so in denial that I joined this call. And I remember being so moved by the speaker, who, again, is now my mentor. She's left IBM, but she was like my boss for a few years as well. And she said in the call, like, I'm a developer advocate, but I've never programmed a line of code. And that really resonated with me because at the time I'd just chosen my A-level options in English, literature, history and politics. And I thought, gosh, like, I've really shot off every opportunity there. Like, I'm never going to be allowed back into tech now. I'm a humanitarian. Like, what am I going to do now? And it was when I heard that from her that I thought, right, this is it. This is who I'm going to work with. And I'm going to do something with this person. I didn't quite know what, but I knew that I had to make my voice heard and make sure I was recognized. So I take to the meeting room chat. And I just spammed the chat. I was like, I need to speak to Melissa. Like, please, can I have her email address? Like, please tell her I need to constantly. Like, I moderate a lot of webinars now. And if this happened, the way that I would be in the company group chat saying, like, who is this student? Yeah. Like, what is going on?
Who do they think they are?
Well, and eventually got through. And the following day, no, that evening, rather, I sent her an email expressing what I'd expressed in all these other emails I've been sending. The email inbox is on fire. And she just replied to him, was like, call me. And I was like, I've poured my heart out into this email, classic English literature style, like, call me. Okay. So I did. And I hopped on a call with her. And from there, like the following week, we built a solution that was a hackathon in response to the pandemic, which we did in partnership with UNESCO, which is the UN's education, science and cultural branch. And it was working with them that we gathered millions of programmers and people wanting to see change in the pandemic. We reached them, you know, online and forming teams around the world and came up with digital solutions, not just to the health aspect of the pandemic, but also with regards to education, with regards to community. And that was like a knee-jerk reaction. That was the first of many initiatives. But that was really that moment where I thought, okay, like, they're listening. And at the same time, I remember having this conversation, them saying exactly what you've set out about wanting to connect with industry is what we're feeling, but we just don't know how to engage students. We don't know if students want to hear from us. And then I talk to my friends and they'll be like, yeah, I just can't get through to industry. Like, I keep getting rejected from internships. And this is a problem I still face now. People, like, both sides don't know how to speak to each other. And then ultimately think that we don't want to speak to each other, but we really do. So that's the problem that I've set out to address, coupled with the kind of more real-time industry standard upskilling opportunities.
So much to ramble.
Yeah,
no,
so much.
It's amazing. It's not rambling.
Yeah.
Are Duolingo, Nike and McDonald's some of your favorite brands? For all the latest marketing and brand news, follow The Drum Mag on Instagram.
During COVID, things seemed so uncertain. How did you turn it into what you do now?
Exactly. And it was really, the industry was so susceptible to change. Everyone was working from home. Everyone was navigating this new normal at the same time, that you couldn't rely on, oh, back in my day, like, this is what we do. I talk about how much education has changed, how much the job landscape has changed compared to my senior leaders who've been in the industry for longer than I've been alive. But COVID was that chance to actually redefine, like, how we move forward. And that intergenerational piece, where we're ensuring that no decision about students was being made without us, was vital. So I mentioned the hackathon example, addressing issues related to COVID, but we expanded that because we realized that so many people came together. There really was a hunger and an interest, as I assumed, for learning and to continue to gain skills and move forward during the pandemic. And we turned that into a global student community where we hosted regular webinar series. And to start off with, a lot of the webinars were industry leaders presenting long presentations to students and a little bit of room for Q&A in the chat. But that was how we were learning. That was how we were communicating. We all remember like the fatigue of being on video calls to do every aspect of our lives. So I flipped the switch and there was no way that I really did it or knew what I was doing. It was just like what I thought would work. And we set up a webinar series where we invited speakers to basically have a discussion with the students. And I, at 15, was asking the big questions. So we were calling in all sorts of individuals. We were trying not to have it be very traditional tech, but rather we had an episode about tech for good. So we were talking to humanitarians in tech. We had an episode about open source, which is where people share their code and like you can collaborate on things together and globally. So we really looked at a range of topics, and most importantly at a time where student and young youth voices, our generation's voices, felt underrepresented and like the government and senior leaders were like making decisions about us without us having any representation or any say, like things were happening to us. That was an opportunity to regain that agency. And simply asking students to unmute themselves and come on camera and create that community and chance to learn together. As much as the industry leaders were sharing their knowledge with us, a lot of them fed back to me and said how much they learned from the student community. Because at that point, it was very rare to have that kind of dialogue with a young person in that sense, and understanding like what the young people were doing. And that's something even to this day, like our conferences, it's a requirement now that they have that intergenerational aspect, because they industry leaders and within my team like soon realize like they actually bring such a perspective to this, that just as we'd consult a subject matter expert on, say we're talking about something in the medical context, like you'd bring in a doctor who has studied for this and knows the subject area inside out, like the young people have this expertise through experience and no one else can provide that the same way. So that program grew, and it was just loads of those individual projects that led to a point where I was invited to a conversation with our general manager. So the top of the business unit, the CEO, you could call him. And he's now someone who I consider a really great mentor and like has fundamentally shaped like myself as a leader and also what I aspire to. And it was in conversation with him that he said, hey, like, do you want to just come on and work with us during your school holidays? Like, we don't quite know what it will look like. You'll just be turning 16 at the time. Like, just spend a month, see what you think, like actually become a part of that team. And that was kind of what led to what it is I'm doing now. It was turning each of those individual projects into thinking, it getting that senior recognition. And okay, so how now she's joined the business, do we take that forward into something that we can build and not just be a COVID response, but redefine the way we engage with students, learners, young people moving forward.
Yeah. And now in your role in IBM, you're championing young people's voices. And this example of COVID, did that make them want to put you in that position? Or?
Absolutely. They realized that they couldn't assume what young people wanted, especially with education being redefined during COVID. And to this day, it's not just making sure that my voice is heard in the decision-making rooms, but rather I have a global student ambassador network who represent our technology on campus. So we're considered community leaders in their own right, but also emerging leaders within IBM. And I always say to them, like anything that we discuss, like if I pull them in for a one-to-one, or they want to share any feedback or pain points or aspirations that they may have, I say like it stays with me. Like I think it's so important as well that when you're considering building these intergenerational solutions, that you actually have like young people and early professionals like represented in that, because you can't replace that bond. A lot of them have like had conversations with my more senior colleagues, which absolutely have the same like absolutely, they have the same motivations and they're keen to help just as much, but simply because of that age, that difference in that sense of relatability. Like, it felt a bit easier for people to confide in me versus my older colleagues. So I think that that was super important, and has redefined, yeah, definitely how we engage with students today. And it has expanded from being like that kind of initiative that I'd been leading to now, how can I create resources? How can I create the tools that students are able to then translate in their own campuses, in their own clubs and societies that they're setting up, and translating what's coming from a big tech company into something that really relates in their global different contexts.
You're very remarkable. Like, you really are. I know I've said this to you before. I feel like I've got a proper Lilla crush here going on. But like, do you realize what it is about how you approach things that it, like, if someone said, how could I be more Lilla? Do you know what it is? Because I've got some feelings about like what I'm seeing. But like, do you, if you had to help create the next Lilla, what do you tell them they need to do that helps them to be where you are now?
Well, I'd be curious to hear your analysis. I think for me, more than anything, like, I'm true to myself. And as I say, like, this started off very much as my hobby, which became like my passion, which through that early industry support and through having mentors that made the industry tangible and relatable and relevant to me, I was able to have that exposure from early on. So I think that being really led by that main mission and having that strong start and support and sense of belonging from the start has meant that I almost feel a need to continue to champion that cause for the next generation. But a lot of the time, like, I've been helping students much older than me anyway, but I don't want my case to be that individual Lilla case. I want that to be the norm, because I genuinely believe that with the right opportunities, with the right mentors and support, like, anyone could do this. It's only been that I have, of course, had that vision and I've been persistent and had that resilience of seeing the pandemic and coming back from that and thinking, right, how can I make this not only better for myself, but for those around me? I think I've pushed through. Like, my favorite book is Pride and Prejudice. And there's that quote, it's like, obstinate, headstrong girl. And like, it was almost an insult at the time to the protagonist in the story. But for me, like, I've always channeled that. And it's, how can I be disruptive? Because I know that, like, what I'm championing, what I'm driving is not just based on my opinion, but increasingly so that of so many other young people. That's my lived experience that no one can take away from me. And whilst growing up in the corporate space, I've learned like how to go about problem solving and conflict resolution and all of that. Like, I think that pushing through with those initiatives and actually just doing the work and getting it done and letting the results speak for themselves, I've been able to overcome a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't know, is that different to what you see?
No, I tick, 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 tick. You've got it all there. I think it's just like most 11-year-olds wouldn't ask someone to be their mentor.
I didn't. And that's it. Now you put a label on it as mentorship. And I say as well to early professionals who want to mentor the next generation, I say, like, don't think of it as this thing that you have to take on to the grave. Like, it can literally be a career conversation. It could be listening to a podcast. It could be watching a webinar. Like, people don't realize the impact that that has on young people. And that's why now, like, I think I have that drive, is because I realize that if I had what I'm now doing, like, if I had someone like me to look up to, I know how much easier it would be and for it to be relatable as well. I'll never change who I am to fit what I think a woman in tech or a tech professional looks like. And that's why I've just stuck with that, because I, you know, and that's what mentorship taught me, because I was able to really see myself from early on.
Yeah, it's incredible though. But that's the thing as well. And I suppose we talk about this a lot on the podcast and the events that we run, that actually, if you don't ask, you don't get. So like, true. And you don't always need to call it mentorship. It could just be, can I just have 10 minutes of your time? I love what you said today. I just want to understand, like, how might I say that kind of thing one day? Or how might I get into this position? This podcast in itself, like, I'm hoping lots of people get to hear your story through this, because it is just that, can just push and make things happen. Like, as you say, there was nothing like prior to, well, in any of this, you're just an ordinary person that just went, I'm going to go and make these things happen.
I didn't know what mentorship was. Yeah. Like, none of these things, as you say, like, I've got a proud Northern mum and I'm proud to be like, I'm British Lebanese and I'm proud that I've had that moral of like that grit and resilience. And if you don't ask, you don't get, because people like squeak like a bit like, oh, like, or, that's like a bit cringe. I'm not going to do that. But I even say to my students, like when they attend a webinar or when they listen to a podcast, don't just ping a LinkedIn connection across, but personalize it, like quote back to them something that they said that really resonated with you. Because a lot of people get a lot of requests, but it doesn't take much to stand out the tiniest bit. The bar is so low to actually stand out in that way. And it might seem like a really bold thing to do at the time, even starting to build a personal brand, like posting on LinkedIn, sharing your learning. I say to learners who are within our community, like when you get your digital credential, don't just say the generic, like view my verified credential, but rather explain to us, like, what did the badge teach you? Like, what was your learning journey? Like, what more questions do you have? Because that's how you connect to the industry pathways and the opportunities and unlock things like mentorship. Like without that, you'd have your badge. Yeah. That's one step ahead, but you could be 10 steps ahead with the smallest of actions.
Well, and there's tens of thousands of people that have got the same badge. Mm-hmm. Why is your badge any different? How can you badge that up to be your own version of that makes you stand out?
Exactly.
Oh, I love this. This must be like, you just sitting here going, I want to go and do all of this.
Yeah, you are. You're so passionate about it, even from such young age, 8, and all the way through COVID, such a difficult time. It's truly amazing.
Thank you.
You travel a lot now for work. How's that?
I love it. Yeah. I mean, I always have considered myself like a bit of a global citizen, because growing up in Dubai, it was this melting pot of different cultures, heritage, different backgrounds, all coming together like in our classroom. So and also in Dubai, I was fortunate that we did travel so much of Southeast Asia growing up. So my parents would literally take us like backpacking age like 7 onwards, like where we'd do all of Southeast Asia and learn about history. But most importantly, it was opportunities where we got to volunteer, where we got to meet locals, where we got to experience like culture for what it really was, not just like when you go to a nice like resort holiday, but really coming to grips with what living in that country felt like as much as we obviously could. That has ultimately led me to do what it is I do now and have that sense of a drive for change. Like, I get a lot of my friends be like, why are you so serious? Like, why do you care so much? But it's because of those foundational moments that have shaped what it is I do now, and realizing that there is a need to speak up, especially for those who can't for whatever reason. So being able to travel with work is great. Obviously, a lot of mine started, like my work started in COVID, and the global and online nature of it meant that I didn't really need to. But having the chance to share my story at global events and see different parts of the world. And again, most importantly, I love when I get to visit other students and see how they're translating what I'm building from the comfort of like my university like dorm room turned into like what it is that they're doing at their university, and how what I've shared with them online actually translates in those different contexts. So it is really a great privilege to be able to travel and have my work take me to those places. I think like this summer, when I think back to some of the things that I've got to do, like it's been so surreal, but definitely like a great advantage of what it is I do.
Yeah, your mum and dad must be so proud of you.
They are.
Just a quick note from me. We'd love you to hit the subscribe button. This helps us more than you might realize when it comes to growing this podcast, ensuring we can bring you the best guests possible. Thank you. Back to the episode.
Your frame of reference is your frame of reference. It's only what you know. So to the fact that you didn't realize that not all other kids were going and doing this, and that they were maybe doing different variations, or some not even getting to travel, you just don't necessarily know that, do you? Because it's normal to you when you're a kid, and you don't have as much appreciation as you do when you get older and you go, whoa, that was pretty special. And actually, you can see how foundational it was for who you've become. And it's why I get annoyed when schools are like, if you take your kids out when it's not half term, and it's like, well, but if it means they can go and do this amazing experience, and that's part of building who they are, and they're going to learn history and learn culture in a different way, then absolutely go and do that.
For sure. And people ask me, oh, aren't you exhausted with all the travel you're doing? And it's like, no, because I had that. That's my normal. Like, I've been used to bouncing around countries, like on different planes, like jumping place to place. Like, I've grown up with that, and I'm so thankful for that, because it's really great foundational, like as you say, to what it is that I do now.
You're also so young still, though, that actually a lot of people of your age don't have the financial means to do that level of traveling. And actually, it's only as you get older, you might have more money to be able to travel, and then you do get tired easier. So it's you're winning. Like, it's brilliant to be your age and to have the access to the world as it is, to be able to go places and meet such incredible people.
Yeah, I love what it is that I do and that it enables me to do that. And I do always like make as much time for fun. Like when I got to go to New York in April for the launch of our latest machine, like there was one afternoon where I didn't have any meetings and I think I did 30,000 steps in an afternoon just because I wanted to cram it all in. So I have learned to like make the most of that time and be sure to see where it is that I am as much as I am hard at work.
Love that. And you're studying all the while alongside this. You're doing a degree at the moment, aren't you?
I am. I'm just in my final year, politics and international relations.
Wow. How do you do both?
You know, I always say that when you have less time, you have more time. Like, I have friends who don't have as much time pressure as I do, but will wait until the very last minute to complete an assignment. And I think for me, like, because I've been so used to always juggling something on the side, being a student and an early professional rather than either or, it's meant that I've got really strict with my time management. Like, I've been calendar blocking for God knows how long. And people think, oh, like, that's so sad, you've grown up so quick. But no, like, and also another thing I'm so strict about is I leave my weekends to myself. I never do any university reading, any assignments on that's always. And I'm in my final year now, and I can say proudly that I've never had to do that.
Love that.
Because I just, if I work a 9-to-5, in like a job, you're not going to be working on the weekend. Well, you shouldn't be working on the weekend.
I sometimes do, but anyway, yes, you know, you're right though.
So why, if you're studying, should you have to study on the weekend? So I think that I've always just been so strict with myself, and making time, like living in London has been an incredible experience. So I want to have that weekend time to recharge, to enjoy this amazing city and do my degree during the week. So I think, as I say, like, I've been so used to that time management. It's not always perfect. There are definitely times where it is like overwhelming, but similarly to my work, which is so driven by my passion, my interests, like, I'm proud that all of the modules that I got to choose at university have followed suit as well.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do my dissertation as well, like in that intersect between technology and policy. So bringing my interest into what it is that I do makes it more fun.
Yeah. And all of it's fun. Like, if you enjoy it, it doesn't feel like work. It doesn't feel so tiresome. But I love that you do protect your weekends. And I absolutely wish I could be more Lella when it comes to that. But I'm such an advocate that that is how people should be. I just end up
overbooking myself. No, but when you love what you do, it goes back to that exact same thing. Like, it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah,
so
it's true. It's true. But it is good to have switch off time, because it enables you actually, when you don't mean to be thinking about work, sometimes you'll have the best work ideas. They just slip in and you're like, oh, that's brilliant. I'll write that down and I can come back to that Monday. Or even for your dissertation, if you're not thinking about it, that's the time where the best ideas will come out. Because when we put ourselves under pressure to think of things, sometimes we can't do it. So
yeah. And with what it is that I'm studying, like, I'm surrounded by constantly, like, politics is everything. So
it's everywhere.
You're reading news or even scrolling online and you're see something. So as you say, like, I always have a notebook handy, or just my screenshot folder is full of like ideas and things I've had.
Yeah, my phone's full of screenshots and I'm like, come back to that, look at this later, and about 100 tabs open at once. I'm not sure my phone thanks me for that, but there you go. So what where does this go next? You finish your degree, like, yeah, what's your big vision? Do you have like a, in 10 years time I'd like to be here doing X, Y and Z? Or what does that look like?
The one question that is so difficult to answer. I think that the jobs of the future are very much yet to be defined. Even thinking back to, as you mentioned, like 8-year-old me learning to code, I never would have thought that the job I'm in today would be where I end up. So I'm very much open-minded as to what it is I do next. Definitely, as I say, something that is rooted in a sense of purpose, that isn't just making money for the sake of it, but rather is part of the solution and not the problem. I don't quite know exactly what it is that I'll end up doing, but I know it will be something that I'm genuinely like enthusiastic about, like waking up to do in the morning. I don't see myself just, you know, doing something just for the job title. It will be a continuation of this, a continuation of advocacy and community and digital skills, just trying to ensure that more people have the opportunity to do what it is that they're driven to do.
Yeah, I mean, if I had a crystal ball, I can see you on stages across the world. I can see you in communities and helping people and bringing people together. I think, like, having seen you at a couple of events as well, you're a magnet. People come towards you and then they stick. Like, they stay with you and they want to have that conversation and then they go on to advocate for you. And I mean, I'm like your biggest advocate and we've only met a couple of times, but I'm like, do you know Lella? You need to know Lella. She's incredible. So sorry, probably your inbox ends up full.
But it is. It's that important. Importance of connecting. Like, I definitely say I'm such a catalyst for that, and making sure, as you say, like, I really appreciate the championing, but I'm exactly the same because we all are addressing the same issues, so why would we do them in silos? And also there's a gathering that I go to every year called Anthropy, and they're really proud to, like, talk about how we reimagine Britain. They don't define themselves as a traditional conference, and they talk about, like, leaving your ego and silo at the door, and they host it at the Eden Project. So it's in the rainforest in one bit, it's in the Mediterranean biome in the next, like, you've got a robin on your shoulder, like, mid panel. It's that completely removing you from the ordinary, and they talk about leaving your ego and silo behind and just immersing yourself in these conversations about what the future looks like. And they bring thought leaders, they bring emerging leaders, so like a big group of young leaders together to redefine what that looks like. And it's opportunities like that where you connect with people from all across society that that's where I feel that sense of purpose and belonging, where we're thinking about answering those big questions beyond short-termism of, like, political cycles, or beyond the headlines or the buzz of, like, AI being thrown around as just the buzzword, but actually talking about the real ethics and consequences and the bigger questions that we don't normally have time to answer.
Yeah. I mean, I might say Lella for Prime Minister.
You heard it here first.
It could happen. I mean, maybe if in that crystal ball, I can almost see it. It's, who knows? Who knows? Yeah. Any other questions?
How has your job with IBM impacted you, like, getting connections to the United Nations, which is a very prestigious organisation?
Absolutely. Like, I would never have imagined those kinds of doors to have opened up as a result of my work. And it goes back to us talking about politics and how my degree plays a part into what it is that I'm working on, and vice versa. So a lot of people go to university to gain the theory to then put that in practice. But I knew when I took my gap year and really immersed myself for a year in industry before starting my degree that I was getting that experience and then going to university to get that why and get the theoretical underpinning behind what it was I already experienced. I wanted to know how the systems that I'd already engaged with worked, and I wanted to learn how to think critically and think of an alternative and how we could improve these structures. So opportunities like that have been surreal. I got to go to the UN AI for Good Summit in Geneva at the headquarters in June of this year. And that was an incredible opportunity where, more than anything, there was a great sense of, like, the arts coming through. And again, going back to community, people talking about AI, but not just in what's dominating, like, the big names who have their solutions, but rather how are communities that are already experiencing the digital divide, in the sense that they don't have access to technology or they don't have basic digital literacy, how are they now grappling with this new wave of AI? And how are we going to make sure that AI doesn't stand for advancing inequality? So they were the big questions that were raised at that conference. And I thought that that was just an incredible opportunity to apply, as you say, like, a lot of what it is I've been doing in politics, as well as represent the work that I've been doing in tech at my day job, to the world stage, because we're over the halfway point to achieve the global goals, which are the 17 sustainable development goals that the UN set out for us to achieve by 2030. And with things like AI, it could be a great opportunity to advance our achievement towards those. But after COVID, we actually regressed on a lot of the progress points.
Amazing. What a stage to get to be a part of. Like, you must pinch yourself sometimes.
I definitely do. And I just started a new module. I'm doing an intercollegiate module at the LSE, and that's on the politics and policy of data science. And even when I was talking to my lecturer, I went off to a work conference in week two of third year, and she was like, where are you going? What is it you're doing? And I explained, like, I was telling her, like, you know, the topics I was going to discuss. And she said exactly that, like, the fact that you get to already go and apply your newfound knowledge and also bring back those experiences and what you've seen out there in the real world into the classroom, it gives you a really unique mindset as a learner. So it definitely is very surreal getting to meet, like, very incredible, like, thought leaders and to gain different perspectives as well. But also I do find myself sometimes finding like the shortfalls and thinking critically about like moving forward, like how do we improve this? And when I'm looking around the room and sometimes I'm the only woman, very often I'm the youngest in the room, like how do we change that? And I always say, like when I've intervened at the UN, I spoke at the General Assembly a few years ago, like how do we, like I knew how much I was gaining out of being in that room, but there are thousands, millions of young people around the world in classrooms who would simply to hear 5 minutes of what I was hearing for however many hours across a week of programming, like how do we actually break that breakthrough? Because they are then hearing just the headline of what's going on at the UN rather than actually the really constructive conversations and the storytelling and the moments that you can really relate to, just because they don't make a soundbite.
Yeah.
If that was the school assembly of the week that you got to listen to some of the young leaders and even more like senior leaders who are sharing actually stories for hope and who aren't just talking about like what's often the doom and gloom that does dominate the headlines, but actually talking about, right, like how do we come together and actually address this?
Yeah.
It's so important that we think about like how we don't just let that fall into an echo chamber, because I know how much I've benefited from being in these spaces, but how many voices are being left behind?
Yeah, you're so right there. I think we say it when with our Aspiration Digital events, often the students arrive in the morning and the mood can be a little bit downbeat if you want to speak to them individually of like, what's your hope for the future? And do you want to get into digital? And people were like, I don't know, AI is taking all the jobs. They don't think there'll be anything left. And they feel a bit, because they get the headlines, and obviously that kind of rhetoric sells newspapers and gets clicks and is what people kind of, they're drawn to listen to because it sounds interesting. But actually, it's not the case. Yes, some jobs are going to go, but there's so much hope for the future and there's so much potential and you can make yourself part of it. So normally by the end of the day, they're kind of skipping out the door metaphorically of, wow, I feel lighter, I feel enabled, I feel empowered, I feel like I can go and do something about this. And just getting those messages, because the problem is, yeah, from something like the UN, you're hearing what the newspaper or the media outlet wants to spin from the story. You're not hearing the storytelling itself.
And ultimately, you can't solve today's challenges with the same thinking that created them. So at some point, I don't know when it's going to be, we will see this shift in power where we do have greater representation of my generation actually driving that change. Not just saying, oh, tick box, that's include Lella's generation, like my generation's voice, but rather like, how do we actually then co-create the solutions with them? It's one thing saying we're youth inclusive. Look, we've got a young person on the panel, but actually like, assembly to assembly, summit to summit, like how have we actually driven that progress? And I found myself last summer, I went to the Digital Skills Forum of the UN. It was hosted in Bahrain, and there were like members of the Bahraini government there. There were UN officials, there were diplomats, like so senior audience. And I did, I was sat on the panel, I made my intervention. And then the Q&A, I was just like, guys, I don't want to be here same time next year and be talking about the same thing. Like I've been coding now since I was 8, like that's just over, you know, however many years. Like by the time I'm actually all of your age in the audience, like I don't still want to be talking about this, because we still talk about the lack of women in tech. We still talk about the disconnect between industry and the classroom. Like how many more generations are we going to let down?
Yeah.
When are we actually going to see that change? Because I've been shouting for it and I already find myself getting tired and annoyed of having that same conversation over and over. And yeah, it's my drive to keep on pushing through. But yeah, at what point are we actually going to move from that youth inclusion to actively co-creating the solutions and seeing our voices make a difference? Because often it is those underserved and underrepresented voices, like young people who have care responsibilities, young people who have to take up work alongside their studies, like all of these underrepresented groups are the voices that need to be heard most. And I'm very much aware that sometimes when you have like young leaders, like they're not actually representative of the wider. So that creates yet another group, another separation, another them and us. So how do we actually ensure that we're moving beyond these chambers of influence where decisions are being made that are completely life-changing for people and actually get into the spaces where these communities belong? Like we need to make sure that we're not just expecting young people to come to these places and fit in and like become like what's accepted and form this kind of mold, but rather how can we actually take from the youth democracy that centers so many students, whether it's Eco Council, whether it's Youth Council, members of Youth Parliament, like young people are surrounded by democracy, and we really need to make sure we look at ways to actually take up some of their ideas and turn them into action. We can't just wait for this day where we say, right, it's the next generation's turn to be in charge. It's never going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so interesting. What would you, so if our listeners that are out there listening today, or for Zachary wanting to go and make a difference, like what steps can they take? How can they be more Lella?
That's a great question. I think there's two parts. So for people listening who want to better engage the next generation, as I say, I never knew what a mentor was when I first got connected to one. I never knew that the work experience I had access to would ultimately lead to the job that I'm doing today. So don't put a massive label on it to put yourself off from reaching out to the next generation. Know that we're just as keen to meet with you as you are to meet with us. And take that first step. Like, everyone knows a young person. So have that conversation with them. Understand their joys, their aspirations, what they're worried about in society, like how they think they could possibly change that. And just have that kind of conversation to understand and start to pick, like, if there's any way that you can provide connections. Don't just force a job title at them, for goodness sake, because by the time they graduate, that job won't exist.
Yeah.
Instead, think about like those, you know, they call them soft skills, but it's also like the habits and attitudes that they can adopt. How can you help them develop those so that they're ready for whatever the future work may bring? And there are so many opportunities out there. As I say, I needed leading towards that hackathon, gaining that early public speaking experience, being encouraged to build my LinkedIn profile. Like, all of these things are small actions, which to you might not mean anything as a professional, but to my generation and to those even younger, like it means so much, and honestly can be transformative. And my story is an example, if anything, of how people just giving up a little bit of their time and doing something. Because I talk to my mentors now who I met at that first hackathon. They're like, oh, don't thank me. Like, I was just volunteering there for the day. Like, yeah. I didn't see it as much. Exactly that. You don't realize how much something so small can make such a big difference for the next generation of talent. And then to people like yourself, I think that, as I say, the bar is so low. And honestly, if you don't ask, you don't get. Like, there's a very famous book and it talks about being brave and not perfect. And I think that that's so important. Like, and something I'm still overcoming. I have so many ideas and things that I could go off and launch, but I do have that sense of perfectionism still within me. It's how can you push through that? And I think that having those conversations and just starting to think differently about imagining what an alternative could look like, how we can drive the change that we all ultimately want to see, like not just sitting back and grumbling, but thinking like, who could I speak to, or what could I do that could start to make that difference? Because once you start to think that way, it's got that kind of ripple effect of like rebel ideas. And that's ultimately how we drive change. It doesn't just happen overnight. You don't just suddenly end up with like the career journey that we've unpacked that I've got now. And as I say, looking back on it, it was just penning that letter and thinking, right, like, how can I change this? And not just for me, but for so many others. I don't know who will listen, but I have a belief that it will do something, and I'm going to push through because I know that that's what I, you know, that's what I want. So leading with that.
I love it.
Yeah.
What does that inspire you to want to go and do?
Yeah, it makes me want to ask people like yourself, like, how do I get in touch with you for like a future job maybe? Or like, what can I do to meet up with you or get in that position where I'm looking for stuff like getting young voices expressed, like all of that.
Exactly. And, you know, as I say, like the what we'll be doing by the time you graduate, it's so difficult to define, but there are those essential skills that we know won't go anywhere, like simply adopting that mindset of being willing to just take things as it comes and be adaptable and like be willing to change and see where things go. But as long as you have that strong sense of you and you know like what your values are, what you are excited about, what you might want to see change in the world, like when we lead with that, like it unlocks so much more. And finding like-minded people, also finding those with differing opinions, like it's so important that we don't keep that within ourselves and we have those conversations. So it's when we encourage each other to think differently, that's how we ultimately do drive forward.
Love that. So you need to get on LinkedIn, I think, is one thing.
Yeah.
Definitely. I feel like we often talk about this, but actually at a student age, it's a perfect time to get started and start sharing some of what you're working on or what you're interested in, or connecting with people that you're interested in, because you can then start to follow their story. Because part of it, I think you even alluded to, some of the mentoring doesn't have to be one-on-one. It could be that you've seen that someone you're interested in is on a podcast and you listen to that, and you can learn so much without even physically having been in the conversation, that then you can take away next steps. What can I do off the back of that?
I do. And just today, like, I was looking at an opportunity that's coming up and was seeing who I knew in that area, and found a connection with someone from like 4 years ago that I hadn't even like... I'd seen their posts and I hadn't really thought much about them for a while, but literally I look back at that initial message and it was, hey, I heard you speak at this event, would love to connect and follow your journey further. It's as simple as that. Like, and now with this opportunity coming up, I'm able to reconnect with them and say, hey, hope you remember, like, they can see where we've spoken and they can see me to be proactive and reaching out and being interested in their field. And just being able to reconnect from there, like, absolutely. And I think that with technology being so fast paced and rapidly evolving, we do need to think about who will take on the jobs of the future, and they are just as keen to hear from you as we are to, you know, that we are to hear from them. So it's breaking that down and not seeing mentorship as this huge commitment, but even if it's asking a matter of questions, sometimes I'll be like, I know you're so busy, but I'd love your opinion on this, even if you voice note it me, like, I'd really value hearing from you, or even if you can point me in the way of an article or introduce me to a colleague, like, try to minimize it as much as I can. So they'll be like, oh yeah, don't worry about it, of course, let me help you out, like, but if you say it in this as small as, not like kind of an hour of your time, but like a quick coffee chat, like, you very quickly learn like how to tone it in a way where like it's so easy for them to just be like, yeah, of course, this student's clearly very eager. And I think finding, like, through some of the online learning tools that do exist, like mine with IBM Zed Explore, IBM Skills Build, and student ambassador programs, different communities that exist out there dependent on your interests, like, you're able to already get that head start. You're able to gain the badging, you're able to attend the events. Like, the hard part, the door's kind of already open. You just need to push through even further to get what it is that you ultimately want out of those opportunities. And they're so susceptible. Like, that's why my role is here, to continue to listen and evolve as the student need changes. So, like, we're really keen to hear what students of today want. That's like how we stay relevant. So it's so important that we have more people push through, because not enough young people are. And I can understand why. Like, it's not easy. It's very, like, when you've been in the classroom and you're so used to just listening and taking note of what the teacher says, like, for that to flip and for us to be the ones asking things of the leaders, it doesn't feel quite natural.
Yeah, no, I think, and to be honest, IBM is a hugely forward-thinking company to have put someone like yourself in the role that you're in. I mean, you're the perfect candidate for it, but to even have that role, and obviously they didn't have it before you, they've created it because they've spotted an opportunity and seen how important it is. So I just love that of IBM in general, because it's just, we need more young people. Like, I always say, when we have young people in, even just for work experience, we're learning from them, even if they're just with us for a week. Yes, we're hoping they're going to get tons from it, but we hope to get something as well, because you'll spot something or say something that we just don't see because we're so close in our world of knowing what we know. You need those fresh eyes, you need that different perspective. So,
and being the mentee, you don't even realize the value of what it is you say, because we come from that background of thinking like, oh, the teachers, those older than us know best. But reverse mentorship is real. And 100%. As I say, like, thinking back to those early webinars during the pandemic, some of them left saying like, I expected to teach them something, but I actually ended up being the one learning the most. So definitely don't think that you don't have anything to offer. It's really important that we see that our opinions are just as valuable. As you say, that fresh set of eyes, that perspective, that challenge, being able to ask why and to bring in that completely different generational lens is so key.
I love it.
Yeah.
What else? Is there anything else?
Well, you've given me advice on how I can get into the industry just now, like looking up contacts, getting a LinkedIn, showing passion in the subject. And that's what I really wanted to gain from it. So thank you.
I feel like you're well set. Is there anything we've not talked about that you're sitting there thinking, oh, I had this bit of advice that I haven't got out there? Or
I think we've actually covered a lot.
I think we've covered a huge amount. Like, you're so inspirational. Like, I suppose not everyone can be like you, because actually we'd all just be fighting to be in the right position at the right time. Like, it is a, you've got a unique set of skills, but more people can think like this and push into ways that they haven't currently. And a lot of it's confidence as well, isn't it? It's confidence that actually, what does it matter? If you knock on someone's door and they don't answer, it doesn't matter. Knock on the next door.
At least you know it's a no, right?
Yeah. Or if they just don't respond, you're like, well, okay, we'll try someone else. Because the thing is, people are busy. Some people will just ignore you, and that's okay as well. Some will say no, but some will say yes.
And then that has happened to me. Like, you end up bumping into those people a few years down the line. Actually, times have been where I've then been the one on stage and suddenly the table turns and they want to speak to you. It's like, well, I actually reached out to you before and we didn't, you know, like, that's how exactly. It sometimes can be. So yeah, things happen for a reason, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Do you know what? It happened to me, actually. I won't name the company, but a senior exec from a big tech company, not IBM, was trying to get his attention, and he just kept ignoring my messages, and then rocked up. I was invited to his event by someone else. And first person, I arrived like 15 minutes late, but I was like the first person there. It was like obviously a very fashionably late event. And it was just me and him. And I was like, it's my moment. Hi. And then he was like, oh, you have tried to connect before. Sorry about that. And it's like, well, there you go. Here we are now. We're in the same place. So again, he's a really busy person. That would have just been part of a long list of many, many messages. But if it's meant to be, it'll be. And if it's not, move on, find the next thing.
And that peer-to-peer as well, like, you don't necessarily need to look up to like the CEO to reach out to, but I'm always advocating for it. It's something you do so well at Aspiration Digital, is like trying to show the jobs that lead up to that, and not just have this black box of, oh, here's my success story after 50 years in the industry, but rather, what does it look like to be an apprentice, an intern, a graduate in this space, where young people can relate to those journeys. I think that hearing from more early professionals at the start of their career can be just as, if not more, valuable, because it is more tangible and you can relate, and their experience navigating the jobs landscape is far more reflective of what you'll then go on to do. So don't think it has to be the glitz and glamour of a senior job title, but also think about those around you and look for those kind of communities. I just last week was with STEMETS, which is a charity I've volunteered for a long time and also been a beneficiary of. So I've gone from being on like the mentee side to being on the kind of mentor side, and I've been on their youth board and really gone from being like a beneficiary to actually helping shape the future of the organization. But it's with them that I've seen like how those different jobs do exist, and being in that space, like, I've grown up with young girls who and women who we started off as just like working through like a cybersecurity certification together. And then one of them just last week was featured on like the Department for Science, Innovation, Technology, talking about her AI grad role and like her career journey. So it's like, we looked up to people like ourselves. Yeah. And now to see her go on and gain that kind of recognition, like being in those spaces where there is that can-do spirit all around and you feel like genuinely encouraged. Like, sometimes in the classroom, it wasn't like cool to be that proactive one and to stand out a bit. But when you find spaces like that, like me finding that hackathon at 11, like, that was that turning point for me where I found that sense of belonging and realized that it was totally cool. And like, other people did exist who shared those same interests, because I realized like not every classroom, not every peer group can be like that. Like, more often than not, I have found that inspiration in those wider community groups. So that peer-to-peer aspect is definitely so important.
Yeah, I love that. Wow, what a ride. I thought it was going to be a ride and that we needed to buckle up, and we really did, because that was just, I just, yeah, you inspire me so much. Like, I want to go back and be 8 years old and learn to code and go and be you, because like what doors you've managed to open are just incredible. Some people wouldn't do that in their lifetime, but I'm hoping from today that our audience is going to go away going, I'm going to be Morlella. I can go and open those doors. She did it. Why can't I? And you absolutely can. So thank you. Thank you for that inspiration. And thank you for everything you keep on doing to help young people get into the tech industry, and especially women. We need more of us. So yeah, just thank you. You're amazing. And thank you so much. You've been fantastic, yeah. Zachary. I hope you've got a long list of things you can go away, do and start looking into.
Yeah, I've got hundreds of things that I can do. Like,
and reach out. Like, let's stay connected. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Amazing. Well, thank you both so much. And we look forward to seeing you on another episode of Behind the Future.
That concludes another brilliant episode of Behind the Future. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen back to other episodes on YouTube or your podcast platform of choice. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, as that will help us to grow this podcast, ensuring we can get the best guests on here for you to learn from. You can also follow us on socials, linked in the show notes for exclusive content. See you on the next episode.